This Week in Radio Tech is supported by the Broadcaster's Desktop Resource, a reference for broadcast engineers, on the web at thebdr.net, and by Telos Systems, Telos Audio and Networks, the best way to hear from there, on the web at telos-systems.com, and by Violet Microphones, handcrafted in Latvia for generations, on the web at violetusa.com.
And now, our feature presentation.
Twert.
The issue is allocation of the bandwidth with telco needs to reserve for dynamic multicast switching.
All right, calm down. He says that to everyone.
This calls for immediate discussion.
All your data belong to us.
From his palatial office of important business.
Or in a choice hotel in a distant land.
This is Kirk Harnack.
And on this episode, it's Tom Ray, Chris Tobin, and our special guest, Igor Zucchina from New Zealand.
You're dialed in to This Week in Radio Tech.
Hello, everyone. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. Very glad to be here. And along with me, two wonderful co-hosts. First of all, from the Hudson Valley of New York, it's engineer extraordinaire Tom Ray. Hello, Tom.
Live and in color. Good evening, Kirk. How you doing?
I'm great. Good to see you. Good to see you. How's New York City for you?
New York City was actually gorgeous today with the weather. It was an absolutely beautiful day in the city.
Well, let's get independent confirmation of that report from Chris Tobin, also from New York City, right in Manhattan right now. Hi, Chris.
Hello, everyone. I can concur. It was an excellent day in New York City. Day to spend along the river. If you were fortunate, this afternoon around noontime, one of the aircraft carriers were leaving from Fleet Week. It was a nice sight.
Oh, cool. That is cool.
Yeah.
I just remembered, I better put my phone here on silent. Otherwise, we, you know, could have a problem. So, phaser's on stun. All right, there we go. Now, we got a special show joining us from halfway around the world, from Auckland, New Zealand. It's Igor Zucchina with a company called Streamcom and also AVC. Hi, Igor.
Kia ora from Aotearoa. Welcome.
Wait a minute now. What language was that?
This is okay. Well, this is all right. That was Maori. So we are in New Zealand, and the Maori name for New Zealand is Aotearoa, which basically a rough translation is the land of the long white clouds. And kia ora is good day or hello in Maori. So hello.
Well, I appreciate the social studies lesson, but you're probably not here to tell us all about that. The reason Igor Zucchina is joining us is because Igor is a bit of the mastermind behind a project, a radio-oriented project that had been put together in New Zealand. And just to kind of set this up, I'm going to go over a couple of paragraphs that Igor wrote, actually, for a case study document. By the way, I should point out, you're watching and you're listening to This Week in Radio Tech. This is the show where we talk about audio production, audio engineering. We also talk about RF engineering. And more, we're talking about computer and IP, Internet Protocol engineering, as it relates to audio and getting professional quality audio from here to there, moving it around radio facilities, between cities, even around the world, in as a professional manner as we can for professional radio broadcasting. The reason I invited Igor to join us on the show is to talk about something that's called PungaNet. In a moment, Igor is going to tell us what that means. But Igor is quoted as saying the challenge was to build a audio routing network that was basically 256 inputs by 256 outputs. And this routing network would serve 25 remote radio stations across an IP WAN with the possibility to route any source at any studio to any destination in a different city even, or even one-to-one or one-to-many or completely ad hoc networks. And Igor says that without IP, this would have been crazy expensive and probably racks full of equipment. But with IP, they were able to deliver a compact and impressive system at a remarkably low cost. And that's a bit what PungaNet is. Igor, did I get you about right on that?
Yeah, you are precise. And in fact, you know, today, now when I wrote this, it was a few years ago. Now, basically today, we have no other choice than IP to really interconnect the sites, because the results of what our local telco announced 4 years ago, that they are switching off the all X25 circuits, and as probably everyone knows, X25 is what used to be like industry standard to connect remote sites using some kind of codecs between them. And basically, 3 years ago, we were told, well, you have to do something, otherwise you will lose your contribution network. And then, come up with a new version of PungaNet.
The purpose of this network is you have these 25 radio stations that are all part of the Maori people. They're the native indigenous people of New Zealand, and they have 25 or so radio stations across the country. And it's important to connect these stations together with audio so that a radio show produced in one city can be shared with studios that are in other cities, either live or perhaps even on a recorded basis. So, Igor, to take us back a little bit, how did this network work before it was what it is now, before it was PungaNet? How did it work then?
Well, the indigenous radio stations, which you mentioned, is actually 21, 23, now it's rising to 25. It was really set up beginning of 90s, last century now. And the original network, which it was all government-funded, was the idea behind that is to preserve the indigenous Maori language. And as a really need to have those all stations around the country connected, there was established some kind of contribution network. And originally, that was based on telco circuits, you know, ordinary analog lease line, and telco was basically having in their cabinets PCM converters and basically transmitting, obviously, across the links across the country using the PCM. And at some stage, that became quite expensive for them, running that mono circuit with 750 kilobit per second, 14 kilobit audio. And late 90s, they introduced X25 circuits, and that was Prima 120 codecs, which basically deploy MPEG-1 layer 2 audio at 128 kilobit per second. Yeah. And each station had one of those codecs at the side, and there were in the center, there were all 25 codecs, basically point to point. And in the center, originally, it was all this audio decoded, converted to ACBU, and then there was a switch in the center, a leak switch, which had all this cross matrix, and this is how the routing was done. And then audio was encoded again and pushed down to the destinations. And you can, as you can imagine at 128 kilobit MPEG-1 layer 2, the audio was pretty much, after second generation, pretty much in very bad condition. So beginning of that, we managed to, because this is the service of PungaNet was originally handled by Radio New Zealand. There was one guy in the middle who was, you will call him, and then he will probably come to Page Bay and just repage the audio to your destination. Yeah. That was originally how it was done. So they had 25-4 basically staffed service, and you know that worked at that time. But how the budgets were cut, and this was much more and more costly. Beginning of 2000, we basically got the contract, and then we made the major change and basically created the network, which was pretty much as works today. So originally, again, we had those codecs, MPEG, and we said, okay, well, what we can do to in the center, so we don't really do this decoding and coding, so we design basically and built the MPEG layer native switch router, which was basically switching like in the beginning of the frame. And that brought a huge improvement. And from user point of view, also big improvement was instead of having some chap, you know, punching the wires in the page bay, we create basically the web-based interface, scheduling interface, where user were able directly to schedule and control their switches, how they call it. And now at the end, when local telco announced, well, they're switching, and this is basically what's happening in not only in New Zealand, it's also in Australia. So there is no X25 circuits any longer. You have to use some kind of IP to basically interconnect. And we were looking for a solution, and at some stage, I spoke to Steve Church and I was telling him, you know, what we are doing and what's the plan. And Steve said, oh, yeah, I have exactly product which you need. And it was that iPort, which basically it's got eight inputs and eight outputs, so eight codecs, independent codecs. And basically now we have at every station one of these boxes, which interface, it's basically a gateway between the local uncompressed audio studio, which all these 25 stations have LiveWire technology in, so XIA components. And that provides us really seamless connectivity to our network, where basically at the same time each station can receive and send concrete eight audio stereo audio signals. And that comes to the center. And we can talk maybe a little bit later about the reason behind that. Why is still, instead of PungaNet, by the way, the PungaNet is Maori for spider net. So the translation with spider net. But okay. In reality, really, the topology of the network is not spider. It doesn't have so many nodes. It's really a star configuration. So it's more like a star net. And this is how the network was called at the beginning, star net. So we have still all these ends of the stations connected to our center. We have here a 60 megabit circuit coming, and we have centralized switch, which terminates, as you explained at the beginning, 250 inputs and 250 outputs streams. They're all native UDP AAC streams and distributes. So we can talk about that maybe later. Why that was the solution which we chose. But in principle, this is roughly what the PungaNet is. And on other side, there are still that user interface, which PungaNet is quite well known about, which provides really seamless integration of all these different routers at each station, and then central router, basically presenting them as the user just to choose the source and choose the destinations, and everything else between all these three or four routers which are on the way, they will be automatically handled by system for them. So it's very user-friendly interface what we have here.
You know, that's quite a big explanation you gave, and I'm going to, in the show notes, I'll put a link to the case study paper that you wrote about how this works, because it's a bit easier to visualize when you've got something visual in front of you. But I want to go back and ask a question, because Tom and Chris, I believe, will back me up on this. In the U.S., when you want to build a radio distribution network to distribute audio from one place to several or many, it's typically going to be a satellite-based network. There are infrastructures in place. Tom, you probably distribute some programs from WOR by satellite, don't you?
Yeah, we go up to satellite for the WOR radio networks, but also here in the U.S., I mean, you can get T1s from the phone company, which now they're coming IT-based. So, but the easiest way to go to a mass audience is by satellite.
Tom, do you know if there's a figure? At which point does it make sense to distribute by satellite? If you've got three affiliates, it doesn't make sense to distribute by satellite, probably. But if you've got 50, 100?
Not at all. I mean, it's a cost factor. It depends on the deal you make with the satellite distributor. As an example, using a different product, we were looking at a different product with a friend of mine who wanted to put a small radio network together, and we determined that if we put in two T1s, and we had, I think, once we hit 18 affiliates on that network, then it would make sense for us to turn it over to satellite, because then the costs made a lot of sense, and the initial cost, you know, the cost of getting in was extremely expensive on the satellite side, because we needed an uplink and such, but the to start off the network when he doesn't know what it's going to do, we could have got the thing up for almost nothing as opposed to satellite time. He ultimately chose not to go that way because he's still very unsure as to what this format of his would do. But it was interesting looking at it and trying to figure out what would make it cost effective and how to make it work.
As another point of reference, Chris Tobin, how are the CBS-owned and operated stations tied together if you need to share some audio among your O&O stations? Do you have a way to get that done?
Yes. Actually, we use the company WAN. We have a couple of IP codecs that we'll use for audio back and forth, FTP sites for static audio. And we also do distribution via satellite for WFAN for all the sports networks that we feed. And to follow up with what Tom was saying, it's hard to say whether 18, 20, or 10 stations would start or affiliates would start being becoming cost-effective, because a lot of times, traditionally, content providers would look for the radio neighborhood, network neighborhood on the satellite and say, okay, how many affiliates of such set networks, say, like the WOR network or maybe ABC or Premier already are out there and maybe looking to pick up my programming? So that the built-in cost of startup is reduced partially, and that gives you an opportunity to distribute, again, from one location to many. But nowadays, we've been looking at some IP solutions for multi-distribution, and some of the content distribution networks, the CDNs, are quite competitive, and you could actually do something with IP and have more control and do more with than relying on a radio station and downlink and hope the downlink is functioning and satellite and all the various things that come along with it.
I'm going to set the stage a bit more on this. The situation in New Zealand with what the Maori radio stations needed was different, because they didn't need a one-to-many all-the-time model. You know, in the U.S., we have programs like out of Nashville, Tennessee, comes the Dave Ramsey Show. So this is right. A one-to-many model. And from the Dave Ramsey Studios, just south of Nashville, they have a codec which is connected on a full-time X25 type of connection to ABC satellite services in New York. And the audio goes to ABC. ABC then will uplink it to all the affiliates that are authorized to take that show. So that's a very much a one-to-many, whether you're Dr. Joy Brown or Rush Limbaugh or Bill O'Reilly or Dave Ramsey. You've got a one-to-many model. But that's not exactly what the people at the Iwi Radio Network, the Maoris, were looking to do. So, Igor, if you're back with us, kind of give us a overview of the capabilities that they wanted to be able to accomplish instead of just a one-to-many. What were some of the things they wanted to make sure that they could do with a network?
Yeah. Chris, hang on a minute here. I'll send you the link.
Thank you.
This graphic, this is the case study of how it's set up. If you look at the left side there where it says 25 radio station sites, this is really what is out there in the field. There's a 2 megabit per second IP connection that goes to each of the radio stations. And they had to figure out, okay, how are we going to use this 2 megabit per second connection? How are we going to get all the audio through it that we need to, up to 8 simultaneous channels of send and receive? Now, they usually don't use that much, but they've got the capability for that. And how do we also make sure that other data that's on that network, such as things from the office, file downloads, emails, file transfers, such as that, even Skype sessions, don't interfere with the high-quality audio that's going to be going across that 2 megabit per second line? Of course, they decided to use codecs, audio codecs, and they're using AAC low delay to encode most of the channels. I think some of these are the AAC low complexity, and some are AAC low delay. And then there's an intercom channel as well. The one of the 8 channels available to them is a dynamically configurable intercom. So a station in one city can push a button and talk to a studio in a different city, and they can have a two-way conversation through this intercom facility that's available. I want to point out, and when Igor gets online, I'm sure he'll explain a bit better. Instead of buying the highest quality IP connection that they possibly could, which was a little bit expensive from New Zealand Telecom, they went with a mid-level IP service on a WAN that gave them a WAN connection from each facility in different towns back to the central location in Auckland. And they implemented a router. I believe they used Cisco routers at each location to allow packet prioritization such that the audio packets got priority over other office needs. So the audio is very reliable. Igor, in his case study, says that not a single packet has been lost on this network, which is pretty incredible. Then the other thing that Igor was talking about, I picked up a bit on this, and maybe I'm hearing him worse than other people did, but he was telling a bit about the system by which radio stations can advertise or publish the resources that they have. Like, hey, here's a radio station in City A, and we've got a health program that we produce every Tuesday at noon. Or we've got a sports show that we talk sports every Wednesday evening at 5. So these are resources that a station has. Well, the program director of that station can publish those resources on a private website, the PungaNet website. And then other radio station program directors can look over the things available on the network and say, oh, I want to subscribe to this program every Tuesday at noon or Wednesday at 5. And the scheduling program that Igor and his team came up with is able to determine, okay, what do we need to do to get that audio to the station that wants it? So the proper codec is scheduled pretty much automatically. And the which of the eight codecs that are in there, that are in the iPort, is scheduled automatically, even to the point of scheduling which fader is the program going to come up on the console when it's time for the program to be on. And they not only can schedule programs, they can schedule other resources, like Igor was alluding to, a standalone studio with no console in it. By using a virtual mixer that's part of their infrastructure, they can schedule a person to be in a room with some headphones and a microphone. And at the appointed time, that person's microphone is available to some other radio station. So they can do liners. They can do a talk show. The guy or woman can be talent for another show somewhere else. So I think I've kind of described there what some of the possibilities of the network are. With this kind of interactive network where different stations can really coordinate, this is a little bit, well, it's quite a bit different than the one-to-many plan, but it does seem appropriate for a collection of stations. In New Zealand, these stations are collected by a common culture, the Maori culture, but there could be other stations that are, for example, owned by the same company, could have a network like this where stations can share resources very easily. Chris, can you see any use of a network like this, either at CBS where you work, or maybe for some other kind of loose affiliation of stations?
Oh, definitely. I can definitely see that. Matter of fact, it's kind of stuff that I've worked on, a few preliminary sketches, if you will, and a couple of test beds we did about 2 or 3 years ago during the time when we were using the Axia product. So, yeah, it's definitely – I actually see that model coming of age probably in the next 2 to 3 years as broadcasters start to embrace IP more aggressively. I think the cost of telecoms and traditional methods of satellite distribution might just become prohibitive for the economies of scale that we're now being forced to work with in the broadcast industry. I mean, TV does it now with video file transfers for video commercial delivery. Post-production video folks in the cinema are using similar techniques now for producing movies. So it's not, I don't see why not. I think it's just a question of learning a new trick for an old dog. That's my approach.
Yeah, yeah. Tom, like, for example, Buckley Broadcasting, what if Buckley could share resources like this very easily? Would that be interesting, or is that not something that Buckley would be interested in?
Well, you know, most of our stations, Kirk, are they're all diverse. However, in Hartford, we do have a talk station a little similar to WOR, except not on that same scale. And we do share some audio right now. It's all stuff that's recorded, so it's all FTP'd, so that's not a problem. But, boy, you know, if we started wanting to do things together and share a lot of resources, I could see something like this working out very, very well. And actually, I'd find a lot of use for it.
And definitely.
You know, there are probably some other resources. I mean, if we started getting more into news in a lot of our stations, I could see our news department sharing a lot of resources on something like this.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, something that Igor wrote about, he said the MPEG AAC codec family offers a range of bit rates and delay trade-offs. So for on-air audio, they went with standard AAC for higher fidelity, and then for the intercom system, They really want some low audio latency. It's more important than fidelity, so they choose AAC low delay for that. And then for the internet streaming, and there's a channel that they use for that. They use AAC HE, high efficiency AAC, for very high bit rate efficiency. Something else interesting, Igor says that we didn't want to use IP multicast in Punganet's WAN due to the desire to stay with a standard telco IP product. And therefore, they contracted with a local firm, XI Audio, to make a unicast UDP stream router. And that's one thing that if Igor can possibly get back connected with us, that's what I really wanted to talk about. Because at the beginning of the show, we talked about this capability of routing 256 possible sources or inputs to 256 possible destinations or outputs.
Can you check offline?
Pardon?
Okay. Sorry. No. Obviously, I'm working now. Is that fine?
Oh, yeah. You're back. Okay. Igor, we were just talking about the UDP.
I'm back somehow. Yes.
Yep. It sounds fine now. So this UDP router, because earlier at the beginning of the show, Igor, you talked about how one of the problems with the earlier system was that audio was encoded at a radio station as MPEG layer 2, brought to a central location, decoded, then put into a patch bay or some kind of switching matrix, and then re-encoded to go back out to some other radio station facility. And that coding twice is a problem, especially at lower bit rates, when you really lose some quality that way. So this UDP router, that was a totally new idea to me when you told me about this UDP router. What does that do, and how does that prevent this problem of having to re-encode the audio as it goes through a central switching location?
Okay, so as you explained, the original idea which we explored was to try to use multicast. So multicast as technology is really bandwidth efficient in way of distribution. So because of multicast, if you have multiple destinations where your audio needs to go or your data stream needs to go to, basically you need to send only one, and the network will take care of multiplying and distributing that single stream to as many destinations is required. Well, that works very well on the local network, and the problem with telco is that for multicast environment, you have to see that cloud, which everyone thinks about when you mention telco and WAN, it's always some kind of cloud, and who cares what is inside? It's just some cloud which will just work. But in reality, it's the multicast solution for telco is quite expensive, especially a dynamic one, which is really required for switching the audio on demand. We can talk about that later on, about all these different technology which are used for telco to really deliver that multicast. But in our case, we didn't have choice. The local telco didn't have a product, how they call it, to supply multicast. And we just, at the end, because of cost, used the ordinary, basically office-grade product which they offer, with no special requirement. So in any case, that product which they offer takes care about quality of service. And when we talk about quality of service, we are talking about the technical part of quality of service. So meaning that each of those packets, data packets, which are encoded, send the data out, and then there is a special marking on those packets to maintain across the network priority of that data not to be lost, so that gets some gain of priority. So the telcos usually charge you depending on that quality of service level. So if the higher quality you require, so higher priority, you will need to pay much more money. So what we did, we purchased something in the middle of the range, which is kind of interactive level of quality, which is in the middle. So it's not like broadcast the top of the range, which they basically ask twice as money than for one which we choose to use.
Wow, yeah.
And we implemented our own mapping and of quality of service inside that range. At the end, we because the multicast was not available, we basically built that UDP switch, which basically connects every remote codec from point to point to that our switch. the switch doesn't really decode audio. It just takes original AAC packets and multiply them according to the schedule, to the routing mapping, and distributes to each destination on the network, to each destinate codec, decoding codec at the stations. And this is how the network basically works in way of multiplying. And yeah, that's explained.
Yeah, yeah. So this UDP router, I would imagine it can route one input to one output, or one input to a few outputs, or one input to all the outputs, if that's what the scheduling had called for.
That's correct. So the one of the options, and you know, when we were designing that, I says, oh man, that must be way, you know, Cisco and all this other technology. Well, Cisco router should be able to do exactly that. And we spent nearly 6 months trying to figure out, to talk to right people on the chain of the Cisco developers and so on. And, well, strangely enough, no, there was no way how Cisco can multiply. They have some specific protocols, which is designed really for corporate networks to distribute some standard distribution packets, like Microsoft Media for streaming and these kind of things, but not UDP professional, not labeled, not protocol-based traffic. So we basically were pushed and required to make something which will be able to take the one stream and multiply in real time with small latency to multiple destinations. So we can basically take one stream and distribute this one to all 256 destinations. And by the way, this 256 is just a design requirement for the current network. This is basically a software. It's a Linux-based machine which performs that UDP router. So we are not talking about any physical device any longer. It is all now in software.
When you first described this UDP router, Igor, I was imagining something big in a big equipment rack with multiple power supplies and maybe lots of blades. But what is this? You showed it to me in the rack in Auckland. What hardware does this router run on?
Okay, we are running we have in our data center here the four blade Fujitsu Siemens servers, which run VMware. We have 20 virtual machines on that platform. It's fully redundant with everything doubled. The switch, the UDP switch, and also the backup switch run on that platform as one of these virtual instances.
So it actually runs as a virtual machine, and I think you said it was running a Linux operating system. How is the software actually written? What language was that written in?
Well, it's actually Java virtual machine, believe it or not. So this is what we did. We had a developer who basically was able to deliver this quickly in that platform as the proof of concept. And as usually, the project's original idea was to finish this in C and to make basically dedicated distribution for it. But as usually, the project goes, we ran out of time. The telecom was basically what they promised to switch off the network. They really did. And we didn't have too much choice then to deploy this on that level. And I can tell you, you know, at the end, the other technologies, which are pretty much like WoW's Flash server, it's built around that same technology as well. And it's serving you know, thousands, if not millions, of services today without any problems. With and at the end, we are talking about 128 kilobit per second streams. This is really not such a big requirement or stress on hardware and the software at the end, and the processor time for this particular task.
Igor, in your case study, you mentioned that the system doesn't drop any packets. I think you said something like that. How did you help to guarantee that the connectivity would be good enough for broadcast audio between these remote sites and the central server location, and then back out to remote sites? Do any interesting tricks? You said you used a Cisco router at each site. What's the basis of the setup of that so that you have reliable IP connectivity?
Well, that's correct. As I explained, we end up using the network which telco provides for office grade, and inside that they offer different level of the services of quality of service, which are cost related. So what we end up doing it, we put our own router. It is Cisco router. And we are remapping the tags inside the telco tags, which is the range of this is a differential class of service tags. And we are basically mapping entire range from 1 to 46 and basically mapping internal network. Because another issue is the network, the PungaNet, is not only used for audio. We have to each station 2 megabit circuits. And around, in average, 1 megabit per second is reserved for the actual audio. And another megabit, or a little bit less, is available for other stuff, like, you know, voice over IP for telephones, for just standard FTP transfer, which is people are using that more and more from their automation software. Just basically export songs as not any longer as real-time audio, but just like a file. And this is activity which we also support. And obviously, that traffic needs to have lower level class, so priority, than audio. So audio has got the priority, and this is basically how it works. But maybe... what I would like to maybe explain, and this is the biggest issue and big learning curve for us here was as well, to understand how telco really deliver this service. Because, you know, it is kind of nice to pretend and say, oh, well, it's not really my problem. This is the cloud, which is telco cloud, and they will make sure that everything is perfect. Well, in the real world, unfortunately, this perfect is very far off being perfect. And this is unfortunately reality. So, you know, when I say the packets were not dropped, well, this is, you know, 99.9% correct, but there will be still dropped packets and there will be still faults in the network and there will be still some strange things which would happen in the network, like telco will have a redundant path in their network, and then from time to time even they guaranteed you jitter and also their performance of the network, which are defined as a class of service which you in the end pay for. Well, some packets will be having different path and other different problems, which really codec needs to be designed to handle that. The problem here is if you have a real contribution network and your expectation is that your latency is like maybe 60 or 70 milliseconds, which will enable normal conversation. So this is for people who don't have idea what how much 70 is, basically better than normal cellular telephone network. So that will give you quite good response between the host and guest, and they will have a normal. It's much better than when we're having now at the moment with the Skype connection, which we have like 2 or 3 seconds delay. So this is important. But as soon as you start to have difficulties and problems with the network, then you can't run any longer such a short buffer to give you that short latency. Yeah. Have to increase this, and then, you know, this is always trade-off. And this is the problem with today's IP-based contribution distribution network for audio or for television even, where we basically have to do some kind of trade-offs. You know, in all the X25-day circuits, basically that was what comes in will come out without any problem. You will have your dedicated circuit with a packet-based network. This is not the case any longer. And what the telco basically use is something which is called multi-protocol label switching, which is called MPLS. And this is the term which is pretty much important and comes really. It's kind of a clever way of tunnels. So basically, when we say MPLS, well, for most people that will be a tunnel between two sides, if there's only two sides circuit. If you have multiple sides, that will be again like a tunnel, but will have multiple branches. inside. And what you can do in the tunnel is basically providing you your virtual private circuits with multi-point and routing inside. And because it's multi-protocol label-based, well, some just name explains that and indicate that that might be the can do different protocols and different even network types. So this MPLS should be able to deliver a multicast. But where is the catch? The multicast, if you're talking about distribution, so you want to send your audio from your station to, let's say, multiple transmitters, well, then you will get the circuits from telco. Okay, bidirectional, fine. But, you know, you have two options. You have one option is to use multicast and deliver one stream, let's say 128 or 256 kilobit per second to from your station out, and then you need to pay only for 256K circuit. And that will be distributed by telco using multicast to every destination, every transmission site. Or you have another option, if the multicast is not available, that to have basically, if you have 10 sites, to have 2.5 megabit circuit and to basically send from your station to each transmitter the dedicated stream. Obviously, multicast is the way to go because it saves money. But the problem for telco is that planning of the network is obviously commercially sensitive for them, and the resources which they associate, allocate, and sell to you in the network, well, they have to be fixed. So in case of IGMP protocol, which is a real multicast dynamic routing based on, well, telco needs to associate the worst case scenario for you, which meaning that basically all this 2.5 megabit backbone, which is required for your 10 sites to deliver, needs to be planned for, and that needs to be fixedly allocated. And this is the reason where the telcos are not offering a real dynamic switching system, but just basically static. And this is the reason also why this kind of contribution networks are really hard to implement using real multicast, because basically the telco needs to be seen by network as the big switch, which is not really realistic.
Gotcha. Okay. That was a lot to follow. Did I get from that, Igor, that basically multicast and MPLS as the telco can provide are not compatible, they're not working together well?
Well, the issue is, that's correct. The issue is not compatibility. The issue is allocation of the bandwidth with telco needs to reserve for dynamic multicast switching. Because, you know, if you have from point to multipoint, this is pretty much static. So you will not. But if you have, like PungaNet does, multiple sites where everyone can take any signal from any station, any combination, any time, well, then you have this aggregate bandwidth requirement, which is basically sum of all in the network, which basically makes no difference between having a unicast, which is from point to point communication, or multicast. You need to pay still for whole bandwidth, and because of that reason, most of the telcos just don't sell you that. You can't actually even buy this kind of service.
Okay. I think Tom Ray had a question for Igor. Tom, what did you have?
Hi, Kurt. Yeah, I was curious on the delivery from the telco over to the radio stations. I maybe falsely assume that this is a fiber circuit, or are we on copper? And the other question I had was, I'm just curious, the farthest station from the central location, how far is that?
Okay, I missed the last question, but the first part of the question, the technology which is on each side is kind of DSL. It's kind of ADSL, but ADSL, just name saying, it's asymmetric. So what we need, obviously, for this network, we need to have same throughput up and downstream. So basically, we really need to have 2 megabit up and 2 megabit. So it is DSL. Based, so it's in some sites is just a copper based circuits, just basically a twisted pair coming down to NTU, which is network termination unit. And on other sides, we have the fiber, which is coming, and basically the telco is just allocating from that fiber 2 megabit of data to be available for our, and this is what we pay. In the center, we have, as I explained, the 60 megabit at the moment. It is 100 megabit actual fiber and interface, but the what we're paying for and what is the network allowance, if you like, it's kept on 60 megabit up and down.
And you need the 60 megabits at the center because this is the aggregation of all the 2 megabit circuits. So you've got 60 is a little bit bigger than the aggregation, but that's what you've got there. Yeah,
that's correct. So this is the reason, and this is where I was explaining there's not much difference in price than between dynamic multicast and unicast.
Okay, all right. Chris Tobin had a question that he wanted to pass along. Chris?
Yes, this dovetails sort of on what Tom Ray was asking regarding distances and copper and whatnot and quality of service, I guess, would be the way to extract from this. Would you say that the PungaNet is sort of near carrier class, what we call here in the States, say 5 or 6 nines of reliability as a system is concerned? Or should I expect more of along the lines of, say, 99.9% uptime? I ask this because I've been challenged many times with our folks internally when it comes to distribution of audio and or video. What's the reliability of the network, the connection? And a lot of times we've been forced to use satellite distribution because there they can ensure through an SLA, a service level agreement, 5 nines minimum. Have you looked at the network, the system on that level and say, okay, we're as close to carrier class as we can be with what's available and you're happy with it? And also, second question is, at the radio station or the end user portion of your PungaNet, what's the level of IT knowledge of the individuals deploying the components? I'm curious because, again, here in the States, in the broadcast world, we have what's called broadcast IT individuals, and then we just have IT. And the two are very different at times, and some we're lucky to have a cross-pollination, if you will. Just curious on those two questions, how you guys approach those solutions.
Yeah, well, I can answer the actual second question maybe first. That's true, and the level of expertise at the stations is really not so high. So it depends, because it's basically community stations, and they have some stations have some people who are really you can call broadcast IT at some extent, and the most of them don't have anyone really technical on site at all. So the deployment of the PungaNet were basically performed by my company here, and we basically did the whole planning and installation, training, and everything associated with the implementation of the whole system. The user interface is in such a level that just the PD, the program director, can log on the network and basically choose their schedule to run. And maybe another thing when we're talking about this part, about which is specific for PungaNet, is that a part of being just contribution distribution network, the PungaNet also has got capability to create the log or schedule, which you can use to schedule your program on air. So the station director can push the button and say, PungaNet is master. And then whatever they schedule in their on-air channel, because there are a few different types, as Kirk explained at the beginning, like contribution channels, the intercom channel, and also something which is called on-air channel. And that on-air channel, when they push the button and they say, okay, well, this is now master, it will deliver straight to the transmitter what is in that schedule. So the network also, one property of the network is that is able to cross-mix two streams between them. So you can really do nice, good-sounding segues between the so it's not just a cut, but you can do crossfade and all these different variation on this thing. So this basically is and yes, this is still very challenging apart how really maintain the system, and when something goes wrong, we have 24/7 support desk here, and yes, the telephone will ring and will say, well, I booked something and I don't getting anything, so what's the problem? And then we come to that SAL agreement with our provider. Well, what we are paying is 5 nines. It's 99.999. But and then you will expect, well, great, you know, this is like maybe 4 or 5 minutes per year of outage. This is perfect. Well, in reality, it is like that. But then there is a fine print, and I think every telco will have fine print. What doesn't come in this 99.999 is all outages which are scheduled outages, so like maintenance and these kind of things. The faults which are caused by like third parties, like somebody cut the cable somewhere in the middle of nowhere and it's kind of not their fault. So these are fine prints which unfortunately remove these nice 5 nines from real world. And I guess you can also say this similar things would happen with satellite if you try to save money somewhere and have a little bit smaller dish than what you should do. And then you have bad luck to have bad weather most of the year, and then your outage is there. But this is unfortunately reality. And I'm not sure how long it would take to get lines which are fiber optics and this kind of hardware connection instead of radio to provide such a service as we expected in old broadcast engineering way of having radio where you design your link for 99.999 and then you really get that. So
the IP world is a new way of doing things. We have to sort of come up with solutions to things we've taken for granted, the 5, 6, 9's reliability. Okay. So you're experiencing the same concerns I have also. Good, good.
Now, I was just making a comment that isn't it incredible how the telcos in other countries are exactly the same as they are here. It's unbelievable.
Well, you know, legal monopolies are allowed to talk amongst themselves, so that's how they do it. Think about it.
Yeah.
There's only about 6 or 7 major carriers, and when it comes to backbones around the globe as far as distribution of IP, 1, 2, what do we got? 1, UUNet, are they still around? AT&T Global Services, AT&T Global Services, UUNet, maybe BT. I mean, think about it.
Exactly.
Igor, going forward now, since you your company designed and implemented this this radio network over IP, if you had to do this project again, let's say you got a contract in another country to do something similar, would you do it the same way? Or are there some new technologies now that have come along in the last couple of years that would help you to implement this even more easily than you did?
Well, the issue is here again goes towards that cloud. I'm afraid from point of view of what we do in studio and what technology is available, I think that's IP, so Internet Protocol. And when we say Internet, everyone thinks, you know, people who are not really so familiar with what we're talking about, says, oh, Internet, I know what is Internet. It is Internet, but it's not. It's a protocol. It's type of networking protocol, which is utilized basically now nearly 100% in the world to deliver data of any sort. So obviously the broadcasting industry is going now to that direction, and this is the way of the future, I believe, at least for now. So it's very hard to have the crystal ball and look at in the future at the moment. But I believe the IP is it will stay for a long time, and slowly will go as the interface increases to whatever 10 gigabit or even more into the video as well. So audio, it's obviously given the radio broadcast, but and when we're talking about the studio, I'm not talking about like what we're using here in contribution, where networks where we compressed audio. I'm talking about linear, full 24-bit deep, 48 or 96 kilo samples audio. The telco is basically good news, and that cloud, they are really working in progress of developing better solution which will natively support IP network instead of having some kind of hybrid low-level connectivity between, which is more or less successful. And I believe the current problems which we're having worldwide is that telco are still mostly using like basically ATM-based platform, which is the native telephone basically switching technique, and creating those virtual circuits and so on. And then they are just apply the IP over ATM or over any other layer. And the progress which we will see an improvement in delivery of this, which essentially will reflect to this 99.99 or how many nines we might have, the reliability of such a packet network in telco site will improve. And this is where we can expect improvement. I don't think there is any revolutionary, because at the end, you know, IP is the platform. It's deliver over anything. Now it's deliver over satellites. I mean, you know, you don't have any longer when you talk about satellite distribution. Well, we are still delivering IP basically. Well, this is only cost effective way in some kind of multiplex like DVB multiplex. You know, DVB4, which is provision of multimedia. And basically, we just embed our data, which is our AAC audio, whatever that might be, in such a cost-effective platform, because the cost is the big factor in choosing the technology, I guess.
It sure is, and it always works out to be that way. Hey, guys, we are about out of time. We got to go. Igor, I want to thank you very much for working through the tech problems there and getting yourself interviewed with us and answering our questions, telling us about PungaNet. I will put a link to the case study that you wrote on the show notes when we post the show in just a little while. So folks can go to that and see the paper and the diagram that Igor put together for us. Igor, thanks again for being with us. Appreciate it.
Okay. It was very good to be with you guys. Thank you, Juan.
And Chris Tobin, thanks for being here, asking your questions. You had one more question to ask, and I think Igor answered it at the last minute.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. You're running out of time. We'll make it happen. Everybody's got the information. It's perfect. It was great. Thank you.
And Tom Ray, thanks for being with us also from the Hudson Valley of New York.
My pleasure, Kirk. Thanks for having me. And it's a very interesting show tonight. Very interesting to hear how this was done.
And next week, yours truly will be on a flight to Hong Kong. So next week, looks like Tom Ray will be filling in as the master of ceremonies, and we'll have
God
a
help
of-
our audience.
Oh, it's going to be fun.
Chris Tobin will be here. Also, our guest next week will be Scott Feibusch. And Chris and Tom, you can beat up on Scott Feibusch for us.
Oh, we won't beat him up. We'll have a lot of fun with Scott. He's got some great stories.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We appreciate it. And we'll look forward to seeing and hearing from you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.
That's all the bandwidth we can pill for this week. Another tort has propagated, and all the transmitters and audio equipment live happily ever after, thanks to the handsome engineer and his kind, benevolent care. We'll be back next week.
Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.
This Week in Radio Tech. Subscribe to iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Search for This Week in Radio Tech in the iTunes Store. Soliciting is strictly encouraged. If you like today's show, tell a friend. If you didn't like it, we were never here. Kirk Harnack's wardrobe provided by the Salvation Army and the Red Cross Disaster Relief Services. Hair and makeup provided by Penny LePay Garcia Hernandez Weinberg.
He's unique, wouldn't you say?
I just want to get it over with.
This ends this transmission.
Tango, Whiskey, India, Romeo, Tango.
Signing off. Okay.